me? How do you want me to sound?
Just your normal voice, but you got to get at least this close. We'll start from the beginning and just sound a little nicer. You're not reading the news. It's a letter. You're a sociologist. This is Wendy Perry welcoming you to this episode of the Mormon Wellness Project.
When I was young, I knew everything. She, a punk who rarely ever took advice. Now I'm guilt-stricken, sobbing with my head on the floor. Stopping baby's breath and a shoe full of rice. No, responsible. She was touching her face.
This episode today is one I've been working on for a long time. I'm grateful for the opportunity to present it to you, even though I realize some of this is going to be hard to hear. If you feel this episode might trigger you in unhealthy ways, just put it aside. Maybe you can listen to it another time. Also, there will be some documents you can access on the website, MormonWellnessProject.org.
I cannot believe we'd ever die for these sins. We were merely freshmen.
In 2005, Gordon B. Hinckley said the following, "I remind you that no man who makes disparaging remarks concerning those of another race can consider himself a true disciple of Christ, nor can he consider himself to be in harmony with the teachings of the Church of Jesus Christ. How can a man holding the Melchizedek priesthood arrogantly assume that he is eligible for the priesthood, whereas another who lives a righteous life but whose skin is of a different color is ineligible?" Gordon B. Hinckley, The Need for Greater Kindness, Conference Edition, May 2005, page 58. In the year 2000, Alexander Morrison of the 70s said, "How grateful I am that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has, from its beginnings, stood strongly against racism in any of its malignant manifestations." Well, unfortunately, Brother Morrison wasn't really right or saying what was true, even if he believed it. And if we retroactively applied Hinckley's rules to past church leaders, well, there wouldn't be many church leaders left standing, would there? But what if there were? What if there were one guy, one man in the church who met the criteria President Hinckley laid out? One man who didn't make arrogant assumptions about skin color having any effect on worthiness. Well, with everyone else laying down, that man would have ascended to the head of the church. This story today is about that one man, Nelson Lowry. Typically, a story like this would have been lost to history. But in this case, we are lucky we have the extant letters between Nelson Lowry and his friend Heber Meeks, who I'll get to in a minute, and his letters with the first presidency of the LDS Church, which at the beginning of the saga was headed by George Albert Smith and later David O. McKay. These events are true and as accurately depicted as I could possibly make them. These events are a preamble to two landmark doctrinal pronouncements by the First Presidency. The first was in August of 1949, and what is now canonized in the Mormon Church and commonly known as the All Worthy Males Pronouncement, issued in 1978. I've produced a dramatic reading of the letters because I want you to be able to hear these words, not just read them, and thanks to my guys who helped me with this. But before you get to all that good stuff, I have to set the stage just a little bit so you'll understand how in the world in 1947 Brother Lowry had the opportunity of conversing so candidly with the prophet of the Mormon Church. Well, Dr. Nelson was an internationally respected Mormon sociologist. He worked at the old Utah State Agricultural College, which is now Utah State University. Years before, he was a schoolmate of a man named Heber Meeks. Later in his life, Meeks became a mission president of the Southern States Mission. And while serving as a mission president, the leaders of the church asked Heber to explore the possibility of sending missionaries to Cuba. This was in 1947, and remember, the Communist Revolution didn't happen until the early 50s, so it would seem logical to open a mission there. So Meeks went on this kind of fact-finding tour to learn about Cuban culture and society. While he was there, he learned that his old friend, Nelson Lowry, had beat him to it, because the State Department had sent Lowry to Cuba to do research, and he had spent an entire year there. I always figured that if Cuba had remained free, it would have become a U.S. state, or at least a territory. Just think what might have happened if we had got the missionaries in there and built a temple before Castro got going. The mind boggles. Anyway, when Meeks returned home, he wrote a letter seeking insights into this idea of opening up a Cuba mission. But you see, there was a potential problem, a big problem. So in his letter to Lowry, Heber asked him what to do about what he called the, quote, LDS concept of the Negro and his position as to the priesthood. What we need to know about Lowry was that he had already spent his life studying the ways in which societies of different races evolve and interact. He wrote, "The attitude of the church in regard to blacks makes me very sad." He admitted that he did not realize that the position of the blacks in the priesthood represented an official fixed doctrine. "I don't believe God is a racist, and there are no pure races." He went on to state that the church's doctrine amounted to white supremacy, and observed that, and he thought there was currently less racial inequality and prejudice in Cuba than there were in other parts of the United States. So he concluded that if the church did not change its stance on this issue of race, that it would do more harm than good to bring such a theology into the country. Dr. Nelson felt the issue was significant enough that he copied and sent Meek's original letter and his own reply to the First Presidency of the Church, hoping for clarification on the matter. The First Presidency, under George Albert Smith, did write him back in order to clarify their views on the race issue. The first voice you will hear in this enactment is that of George Albert Smith. The lower, sexier voice is played by my husband in the role of Nelson Lowry.
"The basic element of your ideas and concepts seems to be that all God's children stand in equal positions before Him in all things. This is contrary to the very fundamentals of God's dealings with Israel, dating from the time of His promise to Abraham regarding Abraham's seed and their possession vis-a-vis God Himself. Indeed, some of God's children were assigned to superior positions before the world was formed. Your position seems to lose sight of the revelations of the Lord touching the pre-existence of our spirits, the rebellion in heaven, and the doctrines that are birthed into this life and the advantages under which we may be born have a relationship in the life heretofore. From the days of the prophet Joseph, even until now, it has been the doctrine of the church, never questioned by any of the church leaders, that the Negroes are not entitled to the full blessings of the gospel."
Here they move on to the topic of interracial marriage.
"Furthermore, your ideas, as we understand them, appear to contemplate that interracial marriage of the Negro and white races, a concept which has heretofore been most repugnant to most normal-minded people from the ancient patriarchs till now, God's rule for Israel, His chosen people, has been endogamous. We are not unmindful of the fact that there is a growing tendency, particularly among some educators, as it manifests itself in this area, toward the breaking down of race barriers in the manner of intermarriage between whites and blacks, but it does not have the sanction of the church and is contrary to church doctrine."
What was Nelson Lowry to do? He wasn't convinced as yet, and so he wrote back, making his argument on the basis of the things he knew to be true from his study of sociology, but also based on scripture, ethics, and morality. And here are his words.
"As one studies the history and characteristics of human societies, one soon comes to recognize certain basic principles. One of these is social change. Any given society over the years undergoes changes. It is forever in a state of flux. Another principle which stands out as one studies the development of cultures is the tendency of institutions to resist change. Although they are established or grow up originally as a means to the end of satisfying the needs of man, they, the institutions, tend to become ends in themselves."
Dr. Nelson now turns to the scriptures.
"It seems to me that Jesus was trying to get this point over to the society of his day when he spoke of putting new wine in old bottles, and that the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. This was an affront to the legalism of the Pharisees and others of similar outlook. It does not square with what seems an acceptable standard of justice today, nor with the letter or spirit of the teachings of Jesus Christ. I cannot find any support for such a doctrine of inequality in his recorded sayings."
Keep in mind the timing of this, too. Not a lot of time had passed since the horrors of genocide in World War II. Memories of Nazi white supremacy and the calculated extermination of millions of people, all of this was still being deconstructed and reasoned out in terms of how could something like this happen in a modern world, and where do the seeds of such extreme hatred and prejudice begin in Germany. He described the discomfort he felt at the doctrine of my own church, which says, in effect, that white supremacy is part of God's plan for his children, and the fact that, on the issue of race, this places the church among the ranks of the most reprobate bigots.
"If the doctrine on race that the first presidency espoused was true, then the most degenerate white person alive has a hope for salvation that exceeds the most accomplished and pious black soul. Dr. George Washington Carver, the late eminent and saintly Negro scientist, is by virtue of the color of his skin inferior even to the least admirable white person, not because of the virtues he may or may not possess.
He goes on to point out how this doctrine may apply to the entire Indian nation and others who may live more pious lives than many of the saints themselves. Finally, Dr. Nelson called out the first presidency for attempting to separate the social side of the gospel from the rest.
Now, you say that the social side of the restored gospel is only an incident of it. It is not the end thereof. I may not have the same concept of social as you had in mind, but it seems to me the only virtue we can recognize in men is that expressed in their relations with others. That is their social relations. Are the virtues of honesty, chastity, humility, forgiveness, tolerance, love, kindness, justice secondary? If so, what is primary? Love of God? Very well, but the second law is like unto it. Are we becoming so legalistic, after the fashion of the Pharisees, that we cannot adjust our institutions to the changing needs of mankind? Are we, as some have charged, more Hebraic than Christian?
As we hear these words today, we see the plain truth in Nelson's words. And at the time of these letters, most people in America had moved or were rapidly moving away from racial inequality. But how would the men at the top of the Mormon Church respond to these plain and precious truths? Well, fortunately, we have that record as well, because a few months later, the first presidency sent him a stern, direct reply.
We feel very sure that you understand well the doctrines of the church. They're either true or not true. Our testimony is that they are true. Under these circumstances, we may not permit ourselves to be too much impressed by the reasonings of men, however well-founded they may seem to be. We should like to say this to you in all kindness and in all sincerity, that you are too fine a man to permit yourself to be led off from the principles of the gospel by worldly learning. You have too much of a potentiality for doing good, and we therefore prayerfully hope that you can reorient your thinking and bring it in line with the revealed word of God.
By 1952, Nelson had joined with other saints who were deeply thinking about racial inequality in a church that they loved. So Nelson decided to go public. Nelson wrote an essay titled Mormonism and the Negro. He decided to go public to the broader culture and published it in a popular magazine, The Nation. This meant expanding his audience outside the Mormon community in an effort to promote awareness and bring the whole discussion into the light. In this essay, Nelson laid out what he saw as Mormon folklore regarding race that had developed in order to justify second-class membership to black members. He challenges ideas of white supremacy and also stands up for many Mormons that he saw as being deeply uncomfortable with the church's beliefs about it all. He even mentions the Mormon Underground, which was really groups of different members getting together to talk about how or if things might change. But people do it online nowadays. And also these days, we hear a lot of the difference between church policy and church doctrine. And as I read through this essay, wondered if this was the first time this distinction had been so forcefully stated regarding a specific issue in the church, particularly as a way of challenging the hierarchy, while allowing for a way out, a way to save face. Policy represents man-made programs or ideas, whereas doctrine in the Mormon Church carries the heavy weight of being received directly from on high. Between the time of their exchanges of letters in 1947, 6 years had passed. By that time, President George Albert Smith had died and been succeeded by David O. McKay. Before he had the article published, it's interesting that he sent a copy of the article to the first presidency as a courtesy, including his intention to have it published. Well, he received a reply from the secretary to the first presidency, and I'll read that to you. President McKay wishes me to say that obviously you are entirely within your rights to publish any article you wish. I should like to add, on my own account, however, that when a member of the church sets himself up against doctrines preached by the prophet Joseph Smith and by those who have succeeded him in the high office which he held, he is moving into a very dangerous position for himself personally. Well, Nelson Lowry published the article anyway. I'm going to post an audio of that letter at the end as a bit of an Easter egg if you want to listen to it, in my own transcription of the article in PDF form at mormonwellness.org. It would be over a quarter of a century later, 26 years, until President Spencer W. Kimball and the Quorum of the 12 Apostles receive a revelation to allow blacks to receive all the blessings of the gospel. When they did so, and the apostles went on speaking rounds to do damage control, they took the cues that Nelson provided and called it a change of policy, not doctrine. They attributed all the old ways of thinking to folklore rather than scripture. In the next exciting episode, we are going to find out the rest of the story and talk more about the 1978 revelation, how it all went down, and the influence of another hero, Lester Bush. Thanks so much for listening and joining me today. This has been a bit of a bumpy ride, but I hope you've enjoyed the journey. And as always, this is Wendy Perry from the Mormon Wellness Project, saying to y'all, happy trails.
When I was young, I knew everything.
And praise to the man, Nelson Lowry.
She, a punk who rarely ever took advice. Now I'm guilt-stricken, sobbing with my head on the floor. Can't be held responsible.
August 17, 1949, First Presidency Statement. The attitude of the church with reference to Negroes remains as it has always stood. It is not a matter of the declaration of a policy, but of direct commandment from the Lord, on which is founded the doctrine of the church from the days of its organization, to the effect that Negroes may become members of the church, but that they are not entitled to the priesthood at the present time. The prophets of the Lord have made several statements as to the operation of the principle. President Brigham Young said, "Why are so many of the inhabitants of the earth cursed with a skin of blackness? It comes in consequence of their fathers rejecting the power of the holy priesthood and the law of God. They will go down to death, and when all the rest of the children have received their blessings in the holy priesthood, then that curse will be removed from the seed of Cain. And they will then come up and possess the priesthood and receive all the blessings which we are now entitled to." President Wilford Woodruff made the following statement: "The day will come when all that race will be redeemed and possess all the blessings which we now have." The position of the church regarding the Negro may be understood when another doctrine of the church is kept in mind, namely, that the conduct of spirits in the pre-mortal existence has some determining effect upon the conditions and circumstances under which these spirits take on mortality, and that while the details of this principle have not been made known, the mortality is a privilege that is given to those who maintain their first estate, and that the worth of the privilege is so great that spirits are willing to come to earth and take on bodies, no matter what the handicap may be as to the kind of bodies they are to secure. And that among the handicaps, failure of the right to enjoy immortality, the blessings of the priesthood, is a handicap which spirits are willing to assume in order that they might come to earth. Under this principle, there is no injustice whatsoever involved in its deprivation as to the holding of the priesthood by the Negroes.
Why don't I just point the microphone to me?
That's not the way this the Yeti works. It's not the way you work it.
Why?
The temptation is to get up here, but it actually sounds a lot better if you don't.
Fine. Okay, let's do it.
Okay. Where's your paper?
It's right here. Am I ready?
Okay, yeah.
So I just go?
Put these on. You can hear yourself.
I can hear myself fine.
Okay.
As one studies the history and characteristics of human societies, any given society over the years undergoes changes.
We'll start from the beginning and just sound a little nicer. You're not reading the news. It's a letter. You're a sociologist.
You want me to go?
I gave you the sign. You gotta watch.
As one studies the history
and No. It's not a news broadcast. You're just a nice man. You're imploring these nice old men to listen to your wisdom.
As one studies the history and characteristics of human societies. I mean, how do you want me to sound?
Just your normal voice. but you got to get at least this close.
Well, I've got to read this.
Well, usually I just hold it out here. Put your mouth right about here. And you don't have to talk real loud. Okay.
As one studies the history and characteristics of human societies, one soon comes to recognize certain basic principles. One of these is social change.
Travis!
Well, what am I supposed to do? I've got to
just pause.
I've got to turn
it
over.
You just pause, you turn it over, and I just delete the sound that you make in between. No big deal. Let's finish the last sentence. Stop. Turn it over. I just delete it all. All this, I just cut it out.
Okay, where do I continue?
Just the last sentence.
Okay.
But you can't lean on the table. Man, you should be doing audiobooks for a living.
Mormon Discussions and its lineup of great podcasts is about helping Latter-day Saints like you tackle deeper, complex issues within Mormonism.
All financial support goes directly towards keeping these podcasts alive and supporting listeners like you.
To support the programs on this podcast, please consider becoming a premium subscriber.
Or making a donation at mormondiscussions.org. Again, that's Mormon Discussions, plural with an S on the end, .org.
Donate today and support programs like Mormon Discussion, Radio Free Mormon, Mormon Awakenings, the Mormon Wellness Project,
Mormon History Podcast,
Marriage on a Tightrope, and others.
If these programs benefit you
and you want to see these continue, please consider making an annual donation starting today.
All donations are tax exempt inside the United States and go towards keeping the podcast alive.
Mormon Discussions and its lineup of great programs
helping you navigate Mormonism. One episode at a time. I won't be held responsible. She fell in love in the first place. For the life of me, I cannot remember what made us think that we were wise and we never compromised. For the life of me, I cannot believe we'd ever die.
We'll start from the beginning and just sound a little nicer.